Welcome to the Food Junkies Recovery Story Podcast. Here we aim to provide you with the experience, strength, and hope of everyday people actively working on their recovery from food addiction. I hope to inspire you and increase your awareness about recovery from food addiction. Here we will talk about personal stories of recovery and the many ways to live in recovery. We will focus on the various solutions so that you can choose the best option for yourself. I want to encourage you to thrive rather than just survive. So stay positive, make changes for yourself, tell others about your changes, and our message of hope will spread. Okay, guys, I've got a special treat for you today. I have my dear friend, Charity Silva, who I'm interviewing today. And I actually met Charity on our free peer support groups that we have. And I'm really excited because next month I actually get to meet her in person. I happen to be in the same area in which she lives in. So we are going to get together next month and get to meet in person and not just see each other in our boxes on Zoom. So, but she has agreed to let me interview her today. And I am excited to bring this interview to you. So I'm just going to jump right in, Charity, and ask you if you could tell us about your personal journey with addiction and recovery and what that looked like. You can jump in at any point, wherever you want to start, and just tell us a little bit about yourself and let us get to know you.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for inviting me to be on your podcast. I'm excited to share, and hopefully something I say will help a few people. A few years ago, when I was listening to another podcast about sugar addiction recovery, I thought maybe I should ask them if I can share to hear someone's story that's right in the middle of this. And this is my opportunity. So I'm really excited. Yeah. So, I grew up and we had sugar around. I didn't really think anything of it, really. It's just kind of how things were. There's a lot of sugar in my home. We would shake sugar on our cereal. And it was just, it looked like normal standard American diet type foods. I don't know. It wasn't, my mom's fairly healthy. She loves fruits and vegetables and things, but it was just a lot and a lot of like refined carbs and things. And then I remember my brothers were in soccer teams, just community soccer. And I had no interest in participating, but they always got a treat at the end of their game. And the end of the game. And I seriously considered it just for that. And so now looking back, I can see that's a little bit of a red flag. You know, like who would do that if you don't want to do soccer for practices and in the heat and all that time just to have this dessert at the end? But yeah, I had kind of forgotten about that until a few years ago. And so, and then I have another memory of high school. I would buy a candy bar from the softball coach who sold candy out of a cart every day. That was just part of what I ate. And again, didn't really think much of it. I didn't feel like it was a giant problem. Went off to college and one of my favorite foods was cereal. I would eat cereal as a midnight snack. And when I first married my husband, I joked that the only food I could out-eat him was cereal. I could just bowl after bowl after bowl. And now I know why, because it's very refined and it kind of shrinks, you know, and it's delicious and I wanted more, all the things. And so there were like giant muffins and the vending machines at the library. So I'd get those. Again, didn't think much of it. I was just kind of getting through school. It tasted delicious, so why would I not eat it? And I could eat whatever I wanted now that's away from home. So it didn't feel like a big, big problem. And then as I got married and started having children, it slowly got like more and got worse. And so I was using sugar and like baked goods and things as a coping mechanism just for stress. And I remember it was getting worse after like my second and third children were born. I have four children and I love them very, very much. They're teenager down to preschooler right now. And my husband and them, I call them my treasures. They're just my world. And so I remember having this point where I was like eating chocolate just to deal with stress. And I was standing in my kitchen thinking, like, I know this isn't healthy. It's getting worse, but I don't really know how to get out. I don't know how to fix it. I don't feel mentally that I'm in a place to do that right now. And if I gave this up, it feels like I would be taking away a big piece of happiness from my life or from my my brain, not coping. And I didn't understand why, but that's just what I was feeling. And so I was using more and more of the foods. And then one day I felt like it was bad enough and I Googled chocolate addiction. And so one of the links that came up was for Kathleen DeMaison's book, Potatoes Not Prozac, and her website and program. So I started looking into that and reading about it and got the book, started kind of checking that out. And I really resonated with what I found. And I was surprised that someone was explaining like my life and my like body reaction to things. I'm like, okay, this is good news. I'm not alone, you know? And there's a way out. There's a path that I could try. And so, yeah, that was kind of how I got to that point of wanting to change. And so that particular program is very, very slow paced. If you want it to be, it's very gradual. You add in healthier foods like proteins and brown carbs and eventually swap out those healthier foods for the unhealthy foods and eventually give up sugar. And so that sounded doable to me. Like I could do small steps. I could just do tiny bits. And that sounded also like, okay, don't take it away. Like clutching my drug foods, like don't take it, you know, it's in my comfort, don't take it. So that program doesn't take it away until the end when at that point, so they said you wouldn't even want it anymore. And so that felt like that doesn't sound possible, but I'm just going to have faith that this might help and this might work. The other thing is I'm a Christian and very religious, and we believe that our body has, you know, we have our body and we have our mind and then we have our spirit, like our soul. And we strive to have our spirit kind of rule over our body instead of the other way around. And I had this like conflict inside that I know this isn't best for my body. And I don't like feeling like I'm a slave to these foods. You know, I know it's not like approved by God, like in my world and in my mind. But I just didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know how to get out yet. And so when I finally figured out that some people do have addictions to foods, not just drugs or alcohol or process addictions, when I finally figured that out, it was really liberating because I knew that it wasn't all my fault. It wasn't a character flaw. It was just the way the world is set up. Unfortunately, there's so many junk foods that are made to hook us. And then I believe that my brain and biology is prone to addiction. And I just didn't know that. And so understanding that what I was probably dealing with was addiction, not just, oh, I stress eat or I overeat or I just have a hard time moderating sometimes. It was helpful to kind of reflect. And over time, I came to accept that that was probably my story. It took a little time, but then I felt better once I kind of confirmed that that's my, not identity, but probably what I'm experiencing is addiction. And so let's see. So I wanted to feel more of a clear conscience for myself, my higher self, my spirit, and with God, because it was just this disconnect between the other things that were good that I was doing. And then I had this problem, you know, on the side. I felt like not authentic sometimes. And so anyway, that's the beginning of where I was at. Do you have any questions about that so far?
Well, so you actually brought up a lot of good points. One of the things that you were talking about the cereal, I totally can relate to that. I actually think I had just gotten married. We got pregnant shortly after we got married. And I think my first child should have been called Cinnamon Toast Crunch because I ate so much of that cereal when I was pregnant with her. And so I totally can relate to the cereal thing. And I, you know, funny, you're mentioning it, that you were noticing things that were a problem is the same way with me. I would notice things that were a problem. And what I had figured out along the way with a lot of work is that I was better at abstaining from things than I was trying to moderate certain things. So I was slowly taking things out of my diet, but not knowing that it actually was addiction. I just kept taking things I had a problem with soda, so I stopped drinking soda. I had a problem with cereal, so I stopped eating cereal. And I would do these things, not even realizing that it was actually the sugar. It wasn't actually whatever that was. So
interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
I relate to that for sure. So you were talking about kind of what the turning point was on your journey and finding out about her, Kathleen de Maisons. Did I say her name correctly? Was part of your recovery path. Are there other things that you have found that would help you in your recovery? Are there tools or anything that whether you learned it in that program or organically or learned it out, however, peer support groups or anything along those lines that have helped you along the way?
Yes. At first, I just started that program and started reading the book. And I'm actually still in the middle of that program. I haven't finished all seven steps, but I've kind of made it my own and taken what's worked for me. And then I did a couple of the further steps out of order. But at the beginning, I was doing that program, listened to a CD set she had with like a ranch seminar she had, where she explained a lot about food addiction and those type of things. And then as I went along, I learned about the Quit Sugar Summit with Mike Collins, and I watched several of those, and I found those really helpful to just learn more about nutrition and food addiction. And over time, I learned that not every speaker would be pertain to me personally. Learn how to sift through all that information. And I don't really like how there's like the food wars, you know, the vegans against the carnivores. And then there's so many choices of what people can eat. I don't really like when people are disrespectful to each other of what they're choosing to eat. So personal, like just choose what works for you and be kind to someone else. You know, just, can I just walk that middle ground, please? You know? And so it is good to learn those, but it can be overwhelming, all the information coming at you and podcasts and things like that. So it was good to continue learning about myself and what made sense, what related to my story and what might be helpful to continue doing. One person I heard on one of those summits with Mike Collins was Siobhan Harris. And she had a podcast that's not current, but you can still go back and listen, called Unsweetened Sayo. And she talked about, she also had a sugar addiction similar to me. And she found that she heard someone or read an article that someone said, if you really want to kick this, you have to actually give up flour as well. And she hadn't heard of that before. I'd never heard of that before. So I gave that some thought and listened to her podcast, and what her story was like and how she was doing better. So over time, I considered it and I went ahead and did that and gave up flour as well. And that really has helped me make more progress with my recovery. I did have like stomach issues and GI issues, like a lot of pain and things when I first gave up flour cold turkey, because I didn't really wean off it. I just kind of did a cold turkey January 1st, 2022. And I didn't realize what was going on, but that's what it was. I think it was like slow digestion or dehydration or something like that, combined with maybe my medication side effect of maybe less hydration. So gratefully, over a number of weeks and months, that passed. So now I'm okay. But that was the hardest part. It wasn't like difficult as far as cravings and things, because I super slowly gave up sugary things. So that wasn't as difficult, but the flour. So, and today I miss those things more than the sugar. I miss the flour things way more, even the things that aren't sweetened. Another interesting moment was listening to one of those talks again from the Quit Sugar Summit. And this, I remember exactly where I was in the drive lane of my daughter's school. I think I was picking her up from like volleyball practice or something, but I was listening. It's one of those moments where it hits you so strong that you remember where you were and what you were doing. It's just like paradigm shift. So he was saying, we basically have cake for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. We have cereal or pancakes or waffles for breakfast. We have macaroni and cheese, like refined pasta, you know, and for lunch. And then we have like pizza or that type of thing for dinner. And it's all mostly white flour, usually. And I was just so surprised by that. And that gave a lot of thought, totally changed how I viewed things. And so because things got so bad with my sugar addiction, I was willing to make a change. If it didn't get so bad, I might have never changed. And so it's that hard thing of, I don't like that I have this problem, but it's really interfering with my life. So I want to make a change bad enough that I'm willing to do something more drastic. So I liked listening to those summits, to Siobhan's podcast. I've tried out a couple of different like support groups, and there's things I liked about them. And then there came a point where it just didn't really resonate with me. Like one of the programs, a group leader said, well, you're not really doing that right, when we were talking about small victories and what we were focusing on. And I didn't really like hearing that. And so that was hard. And then another group that I was investigating, I got the sense that their attitude was, you need to do our food plan this exact way. Otherwise, you're not going to get better. You're not going to really succeed. And you don't really fit here in our group if you're not going to eat this particular way. And I didn't like that because everyone's so individual. And it didn't really resonate with what I'm working on and what made sense for me. And even like my religion, food recommendations, we have some food recommendations. And so I, as much as I liked some of the aspects of that particular group and the leaders, and there's a lot of value in what they do, I'm not trying to be unkind or totally disagree with them. If it works for them, that's fantastic. I'm happy for them that they found recovery. But I don't really think anyone should preach that this one food plan is going to work for every person. Like that doesn't really make sense to me, besides maybe whole foods versus junk foods for the most part. But yeah, so I also found I heard Molly Painshaw when she was interviewed by Siobhan Harris. That's how I found the Sweet Sobriety group. And I really love how Sweet Sobriety is more accepting in that way. And they haven't paid me to say this, and I'm not even at their normal meetings. I just go to CJ's meeting right now. But I love what they do. And just overall, I love their approach that however you're, you know, feeling and wherever you are in your recovery journey, you're welcome here. We're not going to tell you that you have to do this, this, and this. We'll be happy to guide you with some principles that work for most people or give suggestions. But I just love that. I really appreciate the accepting and welcoming, you know, tone of Sweet Sobriety, that it can't be just one size fits all because there's billions of us. So, and we're all different, like biochemically and all of our circumstances. And anyway, so those are some of the resources and things that have helped. Right now I like to go to the free meetings on Tuesday. That's my current group. And I love that. It's nice to know there's other people out there that have a similar story and they don't think I'm weird. They get me. So
they get you because we're very similar in that respect. So yeah, I love having you in the Tuesday group, and I'm glad you're part of our community. And so, well, that actually is a good segue into who has been your biggest influences in your recovery. Like what really, other than driving yourself, you wanted to figure this out for yourself, who's influenced you, and what was your big why as to why you wanted to do this?
Yeah, the first person that came to mind was God. Like I'm a believer in God and that he's like the father of my spirit. And I feel like he's guided me to find the right answers at the right time. And I feel like in my personal religion and my personal beliefs, I believe that Jesus Christ gives us not only forgiveness from sins, and he allows us to live again after death through what he's done for us, but I also believe that he gives us grace, which is like added power from him, from divine sources, to help us do good things, not just overcome mistakes, but to do good things. So I really have felt like that help and power in my life to continue to walk this path and slowly make improvements beyond my natural capacity, certainly. And then I already mentioned Siobhan Harris and Mike Collins and the Sweet Sobriety team. Those are the people that really came to mind. And of course, Kathleen Mason's, her program and her book are really what my starting point was, and they really did help me. So although there's some principles I don't really agree with or some approaches within it that aren't exactly my style, I can't ignore it because it really did help me and it really works for my body anyway. And then some of my reasons for wanting to recover is I just was so tired of having that be kind of the focus of my life. I didn't like that. I wanted time and energy for other things, much more important things. I wanted to be like more present with my family, wanted to have energy for all the things that I want to do. I also have just barely started like a new career to be a childbirth educator for teens. I should just say teaching girls to love themselves, because it comes out funny to say it that way. But basically teaching girls that they are incredible, they can have self-compassion, they can find like emotional resilience to how to deal with life, and that their bodies are incredible, help them learn about their cycle and what's going on. And then we can help them understand like physiologic birth so that they know how things happen during childbirth and that they can choose most things within the care they receive. They can choose what they want to do, because it makes such a huge impact on your life, how you birth and if you feel cared for and safe. And so I really want to get into that work, but I couldn't yet when I was in the middle of the food, in the middle of addiction. There was no way I could take that on in addition to trying to be a good wife and a good mother and a good church member and take care of people in my community. It's like, there's a lot going on. And so what's really exciting is now that I'm on an abstinent food plan and doing better and on starting to become on the flip side of my recovery, I feel like I can give a little bit of my time to that. And that's really, really exciting. And so I also, another reason that I wanted to change is to be a better example for my children and to help them have better health. Because if I'm eating better, eventually they might be willing to eat better, or we'll just have less stuff in the house. So it's progressed. We don't have as much junk food in the house anymore. They know what I eat. And one of my daughters said a year or two ago, "I cannot believe you used to eat that way. Like, that's crazy, because you eat this way now. You're just this health nut now, you know?" And so even if I'm not going to control what they eat, I'm not going to tell them what to do, but obviously I help with the grocery shopping. So I somewhat choose what they have available to them, but I want them to see that hopefully I can overcome this, and hopefully there's another way to eat that's better than what most people do, unfortunately, as the default. And just to like encourage them, if they have a similar struggle, that I can be there to walk with them, and because I understand it and I get it. I do have this guilt of having so much sugar like during my pregnancy. So I know that it affected them at least a little bit in their developing body, but I can't go back in time and fix it. But I can do what I can now. And that's going to have to be sufficient. You know, at least it didn't continue, and at least it wasn't something more difficult, like alcohol or drugs or something. I know that sugar had an effect on our bodies, but yeah, I'm learning to be more patient with myself and less guilty. But I do want them to just know that I care for them, and I want them to have their best life too, and to be healthy so that they're not having to go through what I went through. You know, at least they'll know instead of being ignorant to it. Like, I didn't know. They'll know the difference. One of the most helpful things I've learned is what people have explained to me is you don't necessarily restrict 100% from your children, because they're going to have access to things everywhere. Even if it's not in your house, they have things everywhere. So it's almost better to teach them, pay attention to your body and see how you feel when you eat such and such food. And hopefully your body will tell you, "I don't feel so great after that," or the next day or something. That's way more important than this food is good and this food is bad, because it's so individual. And a little bit of this sweet dessert, like occasionally once a month or whatever, actually our bodies can handle that fine. I can't handle it because I have an addictive, you know, tendency towards certain foods, but really our bodies are incredible. They can handle it. So yeah, I wanted to have, like I talked about, just the clear conscience of not having that struggle all the time. Like, this isn't good, but I can't stop. And just all that energy and the food thoughts. A lot of people in recovery have talked about when they finally get out of the food, they have such a clear mind and everything's calm. And I've found that, and I kind of forget that I used to feel differently, because that's my new normal. Like, wow, this is nice. Like, this calm, like peace. There's still difficult things, ups and downs, but it's not the emotional blood sugar up and down roller coaster with the food and the energy up and down. And yeah, the food thought, like being sitting in church, I'm like, what am I going to have for lunch? And what am I going to have for dessert? And it's just like, that's really distracting and frustrating. And so I am thankful that that has happened for me too. So Now, those are the main things, I guess.
That's awesome.
Yeah, having, yeah.
That's great. You were talking about, I understand, because I have four children as well. It's funny, telling the audience that where your oldest starts, mine ends. So my youngest.
Yes, it's awesome.
Charity. So
same age, yeah.
And I remember feeling very guilty myself about all the sugar that I ate while I was pregnant with them. But, you know, you actually hit the nail on the head when you said, God allows grace. And and my mother used to say this, when you know better, you do better. Maybe not all the time, but eventually you might get there faster if you know better. And we didn't know any better. I mean, we just listened to what people were telling us to do. And we did the best we could with the information that we had. So the grace is definitely there. So one of the things that I really am interested in is, because I know that most people in recovery have had some obstacles and setbacks and things that haven't quite gone the way you had hoped. How have you overcome those while you've been in recovery?
Yes, I'm happy to talk about that next. I just want to comment on, if you know better, you'll do better. So that mm-hmm. is piece a part of it. But Mike Collins talks about, you can get all this knowledge and all this information, but you have to start putting a few things into action and trying some things with your actions, because it won't change otherwise. And I love that there's different options out there now for recovery. There's different ways, different food plans. At least try something, anything. Because yep. even knowing all these things, it's not quite enough just to know it, just like anything. Mr. Rogers, who's my favorite TV celebrity, he talks about, you have to do it. You can't just think about it. You have to do it. And not in a guilt trip type of way. I'm not saying, well, just go do it. But find something teeny tiny small to start with and just try that. You know, be kind to yourself. It's been a crazy ride. And just find some support and find a plan or something that might you think might work, and just start to try it out. You know, so, but it's true. Now I do know better. And I have tried something and it is working. So as I learn, that knowledge helps me stay motivated to continue. And it helps me also have that guilt like mostly removed. And so, yeah, so as I was thinking about obstacles and setbacks, I just, when I, you know, binge on something, I didn't have too difficult of a time being compassionate for myself. I kind of understood, hey, it's life and everyone makes mistakes. We can try again tomorrow. I can remember what I've already accomplished, whether it's small or big or other things in my life. Like, I can keep going. That's okay. No one's perfect. Not as an excuse to just continue to do it over and over again, but just, that's all right. It happens. Having compassion for that addictive part of my brain and past habits of decades of time that this has been. So that's going to take some time to unwind, and that's all right. And then seeing it slowly over time, I was able to see things like that as more of a learning experience, like a data collection. Like, I didn't know that that would cause me to binge, or this food I certainly can't moderate. I didn't maybe notice that or recognize that without trying that and living it. And so now I can make a note about that. You know, even if it's something, a healthy food causing like digestive issues, something like that, I can make a note about it and just be aware. And instead of being, I would feel frustrated, like I'm trying to eat this healthy stuff and it's causing this issue, which is frustrating, but I wouldn't have known that without doing it. And so that's something else that helped. The other thing that came to mind was, my marriage is very strong. We get along great. We've had a really good marriage. But when I was in the middle of my recovery a couple of years ago, right when I was giving up flour and giving up less, giving up more of the processed foods, having less of those, it was starting to take a strain. And my husband didn't understand what I was doing. He didn't really see what I was working on as essential. He didn't really understand my perspective, because he's a different person and doesn't have food addiction. And he basically felt like what I was eating was kind of extreme, and that the time I was spending trying to cook these whole foods for myself and learn all these things, he felt like that was taking away from our relationship and from our children's relationship, and even from my religious and spiritual like relationship with God and my like duties with church and things. And he might have not been wrong. You know, I appreciate feedback. I don't want to be out of balance. And I think that might have been happening to an extent. But I also felt like I'm doing the best I can here to recover from a serious addiction. And it's not the same for everybody, but there's not very many of us out there. There are, but there's not very many of us together in groups in the community going through this. And this is what I've been taught to try to do. And it's the best I know how right now. And I kind of felt that conflict of, well, I can't give this up, but I also don't want my marriage to suffer. So it was a tricky time where, and we talked about it and tried to find ways where I could work in time throughout the day or something like that to work on my food, like cook my food. Because most evenings, my husband and I will watch a TV show together or part of a movie. That's just what we like to do together. We'll watch things to unwind from the day and just hang out. And if I'm remembering right, I probably was using some of those evenings for cooking, but maybe I didn't talk it through with him and say, look, this is what I'm working on. I'd like to do this day and this day for my cooking. Does that work? And so maybe it was just a miscommunication a little bit, but he also felt like I was almost like a different religion, or not quite an idol, but just like my focus was shifted is what he was saying and what it felt like his perspective was, that I was so involved with the process of recovery and learning all these things about nutrition that he felt like it was kind of askew and out of balance. And again, I do appreciate the feedback, and I certainly, his relationship is much more important to me than many things, but I also, I didn't want to just stop what I was doing for my recovery. So it was a tricky thing. We had to kind of figure out this compromise of, I still care about my relationship with him and I want to have time with him, but I, and my children have too, and the other things I do with my religious practices. But I feel really strongly that I need to help myself get well so I can be a better wife and a better mother and a better, you know, person in the community. And so, yeah, gratefully, I don't remember exactly what was said or what we decided, but things are better right now. So I'm grateful for that. It's interesting. It's a tricky place to be. He also sees the summits I listen to and things like that. He sees those folks as really extreme and kind of close-minded towards the medical field or towards other things. He doesn't really feel like there's a lot of scientific fact and basis for the sugar addiction. And I think that there is, but anyway, that's his perspective. So it's a tricky thing to navigate. But that was the other thing that came to mind. It was kind of a challenge that I've gone through.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of our listeners that can relate to that as well. I have my own experience with that as well. For me, I went through something very similar. But unfortunately, I had been trying to get my husband to eat better for years. Unfortunately, and both fortunately, my husband did not have a heart attack, but he had quadruple bypass surgery, and he had to change everything that he was doing. And luckily he was married to somebody who knew a lot about the changes that need to be made, and his health has improved drastically over what it was. So I can totally relate to that. I've had many, many conversations myself with my husband and trying to explain the science and saying, well, why don't you read this book? But I can totally relate to that. My husband will never listen to this podcast, so he won't hear me talking about it. I've been married for 26 years. So this isn't anything he doesn't know about what I would say in person if you were standing here. So that's good too. So talking about some insight or maybe that you have learned in the recovery process that you wish you'd have known earlier. Is there anything that you can think of that you wish you'd have known earlier in the process of recovery?
Some of them we've already spoken about, that addiction is real, even for foods. And there is such a thing as not being able to moderate even foods. And I wish I would have known that. It would have made more sense and maybe helped me get on my recovery journey a little bit earlier. But That's all right. It's my story. It's my life. Just growing up, I didn't have any exposure to that as a possibility. It was just drugs and alcohol behaviors, you know. And then for me, giving up flour was really key. I'm really thankful that I at least gave that a try. I'm not currently eating flour still. I might try to reintroduce something in the future, but I don't feel ready yet. I didn't know that was something people did. And so that was helpful for me to learn. And like we've spoken about, this issue was not all my fault. It was mostly to do with our environment around us and my biology, my brain, you know, the way it's programmed. I don't need to be embarrassed about it. I'm getting better about it. I wish I would have felt more vocal right in the middle of it, but it's hard. You're struggling and you feel embarrassed that you're going through it. But now that I'm starting to emerge the other side, I own it now. I'm willing to talk about it now, and I'm happy to share with other people who might be struggling or want to know. Again, partly with that, it's not a moral issue or a character flaw. It's not like a worthiness issue. It's just, this is what happened and this is what my body does, and I can work with that and slowly improve. And that I didn't know there were other people in the world that really struggled with sugar addiction. It didn't really seem like a concept, but yeah, that's some of the things I jotted down.
Yeah. So are there any common misconceptions? Because that's a perfect segue into Heather. Are there any common misconceptions about addiction and recovery that you are interested in telling our audience about?
The only other one we haven't mentioned yet is the misconception that if I just had more willpower, I could beat this. Like, I must be the one that's weak. I'm just not strong enough. And that is entirely not true. That is a lie. And it's not about willpower. It's only about, you know, one person says skill power. You know, you learn new tools, you learn new ways of eating, you find support that you need, and just make, like I said, baby steps. It's not about willpower. Take that guilt and throw it away. You know, it's not. It's a process. It's a journey, and everybody can slowly improve. And we have each other's back, so we can do it together. So,
yeah, that's why the community is so good. Is like they are our biggest cheerleaders. I think that the community with recovery, because I always, for me myself, I was always a very determined person, and I would always do things, and I just knew I could do them. I was like, I'm just going to make it happen. But I couldn't do that with this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I found a recovery community that I was like, oh my gosh, I really can't do this on my own. I really need the help of the group. So the community has been such a big help to me myself. So I totally get where you're coming from on that. I'm going to shift the focus a little bit and ask you, what has changed? What have been the biggest changes since entering recovery that you have noticed? What have been some of the big things that have really resonated with you since entering recovery that are different from the beginning when you first, before you were in recovery?
Yes. Again, that mindset and that like overall feeling, again, my mind and my thoughts and my body of things are usually calm and peaceful without those nagging food thoughts. It's like amazing. And I kind of, like I said, I kind of forget that it used to be different from that because it's kind of the new normal. I'm adjusted to the steady emotions and better energy. I'm so excited to finally be having more energy in my life after a long time, years and years. I have a relative with narcolepsy, and I wondered if maybe I had that because I've had fatigue. And yes, I'm a mother of four. And yes, you can be fatigued from just living life or pregnant or nursing or taking care of little ones or all these things, or, you know, struggling with food. That's really hard for me. I'll have a big sugar crash if I eat a bunch of food. That's not good for me, for my body. If it's, yeah, high sugar or refined carbs, I will definitely have like an energy crash. I would binge at night and then just fall asleep on the couch and just sleep there the rest of the night. And that was kind of embarrassing. And I don't do that anymore. And the other thing that's helped me is I've been exercising almost every day since Christmas. So we're recording this in March 2024. And that has actually helped me more with my energy than the foods have, which was a surprise. And I'm kind of sad to admit that. But well, how I felt before was, I know it's important to get a lot of sleep. I know it's important to exercise. I know it's important to eat good foods, but I cannot spend my energy and focus on all of them at the same time. I don't have the capacity to do all those goals right now. So I was doing the food, which I feel like was correct and I wasn't wrong, but still struggling with the energy. And even with now with what I eat proteins, I eat like brown rice and I eat, you know, all these things, better foods overall, I was frustrated that I still had fatigue going on. And so the exercise, it's not very much, but I still do a little bit. And my husband, he's really into exercise right now. So we joke that he's Mr. Fitness and I'm Miss Nutrition because he knows all the muscles and the running things. And I'm the nutrition person in our house. But to get your heart rate up really helps you with the energy. It just helps everything in your body work better. Any movement is better than not. So anything is great. Whatever will get me doing, you know, on a walk or any movement is good. But the more vigorous, it can additionally help with benefits, more benefits with that. So I wasn't sure if I'd need to go have a sleep study done to see if I have narcolepsy. But recently, it's been better. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that will continue. And I really wasn't able to implement that change until now. It's been a very gradual process. And so, I'm a night owl, early bird. There we go. Night owl. I'm a night owl and I've always loved staying up. I'm like, I'm a grown up. I can choose when I go to bed. I don't want to go to bed yet. You know, I read or do other things, but then I'd have to get up and help children go to school and things like that. So you can't choose what happens the next day or as a consequence of your sleep choices. But I just never was even motivated to get to bed on time. Like, I don't want to do that, you know, but just in the last year or two going through recovery, finally, I felt like, you know, maybe I should try to get to bed a little bit earlier because it really would be better for me. So that was a surprising change to feel like this new motivation to at least get to bed earlier than I used to go to bed, even if it's not super early. Because I didn't experiment with a fatigue problem. I didn't experiment like with like 9 hours of sleep for a week and the same decent food I was eating. And I don't think I tracked my exercise at that time. This was like a year or two ago. And it still didn't really help my fatigue. So that was interesting, even with like a lot of sleep. So for me right now, the exercise has been helping. And I think it all builds upon itself. Like the better food helps and the better sleep sort of helps. And then, I mean, it does help. And then, getting some movement helps everything work better. Let's see. I lost my train of thought about that.
That's okay. Maybe we'll circle back around because, you're talking about it now, but what does a day in the life look like beyond the food? Like what is a day in life of recovery? What does it look like for Charity on a daily basis?
Sure. So, again, not an early bird. So I'll get up when it's a school day, I'll get up around 6 and help my children get up and get ready for school. My husband is wonderful and he'll get up with whoever wakes up earliest, especially if it's our youngest. And then I stay up with the teenagers late at night. So it's perfect. And then he'll go to bed super early. And so that helps. I'll get up. And again, just since December, I've been trying to get just a little bit of movement in. My dilemma before was I was having this big like meal for breakfast because I track my protein grams. I haven't been writing it down or tracking it exactly for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but in the past several years, I have tracked like how many grams of protein I'm having a day and in each meal to try to get a certain amount with the program I'm doing. And so I was having this big meal with the protein I need. And then I would be so full that I would just be tired, you know, or just after you eat a big meal, you're not ready to go run or do a big workout. So I think that was part of the problem was I had this big meal, like on my new food plan, trying to eat the right food. But then I was like tired because I ate this big meal and getting everyone off to school. And then once they're all at school, it's like, okay, everyone's off to school. Everyone took their meds and, you know, like got everyone where they need to be. And so what I decided to try was, why don't I just have like a piece of my breakfast or a snack or just a little bit of food? Because I am pretty hungry when I first wake up. And the program I'm doing suggests eating within 1 hour of waking up so that your blood sugar can be more stable. So I said, let me try to just have a little food and then I'll do some exercise, some movement. Lately, I've just been doing things in my house. We have Nintendo Switch, Ring Fit Adventure. It's really fun. You can jog and there's this cool, like, flexible ring. It's like a thick plastic and rubber and you do these strength training things, but it's all this game, like to defeat these pretend monsters and it makes it fun. So I'll do that. Or I love Dance Dance Revolution. We actually have a super old PS2 and I like to do that. We have a treadmill, which is really nice. So I'll do some movement and then I'll finish my breakfast. So my morning takes a while because I'm doing all these things. So although I'm not having the three meals, like sit down and eat my meals, I'm just trying new things. I'm trying different things. And so that's been what I've been doing lately. I'll have my workout clothes, you know, and have my breakfast and slowly get dressed, have my exercise, finish my breakfast, and then I'll change my clothes for the daytime clothes. And then my daughter, who's still young enough to not be in school, I'm with her. So she has preschool a couple times a week. We'll have lunch and hang out. And then, kind of think responding to emails and texts, friends or people from church. Things like that, cooking food for myself. I tried one day a week, like that'll be my cooking day. And it didn't go really well, but it was a cool thing to try. Maybe I'll do it again. Like maybe I'll cook all my food, most of my food that day. Just have a dedicated like day, like laundry days this day and cooking days this day. It didn't go amazingly well, but that's all part of the process. Like we'll see. Right now it's just, I'm out of this food for myself. I need to make a batch of chili. So let's work that into my schedule or my family's dinner schedule. So I kind of go throughout my day. I'm learning how to kind of cook as I go a little bit. Like I'll just make this here or that there. It's just with practice and time. And then I pick up my daughter from elementary school and my other daughters either come home from junior high school or they have like musical practice. And so we'll check in with them and hang out and then we'll have family dinner together. I'm grateful that my husband and I kind of have that as a priority that when we can, we all sit down and have dinner together and chat, you know, we're all together again. We're here, you know? Oh, and we sing songs like for everything. We have a song for scripture time. We have a song for prayer. We have a song for family night. And so, and my daughters are really good singers. So we're like the Von Trapp family. We just break out in harmony and it's really fun. So it's really cool to have like talented people living under the same roof. It's really fun. So we'll have our family time. We chat about just whatever we're doing in our lives and what we're going through or what's on the calendar. My mom would do that too. We'd roll our eyes like, we don't want to go over the calendar. We're going to be here forever, you know? And then after dinner, we will have our scripture time. And we usually just either sit around the table and my husband will read or we'll put it on the TV where you can cast what you have on your phone up on the TV. And it's helped our girls learn to read, to have these giant words like up on the screen. And big words, you know, from the scriptures, you're not the easiest reading. So we'll read scriptures. We'll have a family prayer. My husband is very sweet to put my youngest daughter to bed. He takes care of bedtime for her. So sweet. He'll get her allergy medicine and her milk cup, which is so sweet because someday she'll be much bigger than that. So, but right now he does that and he helps her. He'll rock on the rocking chair for a minute and then he'll go help lay with her for, you know, 10 minutes while she falls asleep. And then we'll hang out with my elementary school daughter a little bit. She likes to play video games and build things with Legos. She's our little like engineer. And then she'll go to bed. They share a room with about the youngest two. And then my older daughters will do homework or they'll be with friends in the evening. And we kind of like go our separate ways. They kind of do their evening things and me and my husband will usually watch something super fun. We have different shows we really like and we'll have that. evening time. And then we take our children's cell phones and charge them here in my room for the night so they can't be up on the cell phones all night. And then my husband goes to bed a certain time, and then I try to get myself ready for bed a certain time. Yeah, that's my typical day. Let me see what else I wrote down for that. Just learning to be flexible and being okay with being flexible. Like, I'm not doing the exact same thing every day, certain times. I just try to do what I can, like the top priority things, you know? So yeah. Trying to be present for my family, present for my husband and my children and people in my life. Like I mentioned, I get to start teaching soon, community classes, and someday I'll help with online classes. And so I'm excited about that. I try to schedule in a certain number of hours, try to meet those hours in a week, but it's volunteer. So the person in charge, she's very much like me and very sweet and doesn't expect me to log in a certain number of hours. It's just work it in as you can, which is so nice and so my style. But that's kind of a typical day. Those are the main things.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I think even with having four children and a husband and a busy schedule, that you have to learn to be flexible. And that's usually when I was, for myself, that was usually when I would get into the food, is when that would happen, was because I couldn't cope with all these changes that were flying at me all at the same time. And I was having to react. I didn't have any coping skills to deal with that. I hadn't been taught coping skills to do that. And I was clueless as to how to handle all of these things at the same time. And yeah. So I totally get that. And that recovery has helped me with all of that, with those coping skills and learning skills. Thinking of skills, how do you handle social situations? You mentioned your church quite frequently. I don't know about your church, but at my church, there is a lot of sugar around a lot of the time. And so I don't know if that's the case with your church, but what is it?
It is.
How do you handle? Do you have any tips or tricks or techniques that you can tell our audience about how you handle that, especially in early recovery?
Yes. So in early recovery, when I first gave up chocolate and candy, I did not even go to the Halloween party. I'm like, that's not a safe zone for me. I don't want to smell it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to be around it. So I'm really sorry, but I can't attend this. I will prepare anything you need me to do in advance for our booth or whatever, but I cannot attend this year. So, and other social things, I would just, if I didn't have to be there, I would just refrain from going to some of those things, but it is everywhere. It's really frustrating. And so in my own sphere of influence, when I'm teaching a children's class, I do not bring treats. I bring apples and cheese and something else and try to teach about that. And so I just kind of ignore it a little bit when it's there. And my girls know that they can have it, but they usually don't feel very good. They're like, I ate too many cookies, or, you know, they understand. I don't like that it's there, but I think slowly we can make a difference and at least be vocal about it. Like, there's a women's group and they asked for feedback. And I said, I would love it if there's some more healthy choices at our get-togethers. And so they've started providing fruit and things like that in addition to the dessert. So I really appreciated that. So as I've gone along with my recovery journey, I've felt more confident in feeling like this is what I'm doing for myself. I am okay with, I'll bring my own food anywhere I go, almost anywhere and anytime. I'll bring something that I can eat so that I bring my own stuff with me and less tempted. And I don't feel embarrassed really anymore about it. I feel confident, like this is what I need to do, but I don't try to do it in a self-righteous way. I don't want anyone to feel guilty about what they eat. I'm not trying to make a statement about myself or about them. I just do this because that's what I need to do for myself. And so trying to be compassionate. Everyone has their own story and their own journey. And so, yeah, I tell people sometimes, oh, I'm bringing my own food, or I have certain food restrictions. If I need to tell them, I'll tell them. Yeah, it is frustrating that it's everywhere. I hope we can slowly make a difference for good. But overall, just either bring my own things or just try not to be too close to that table. Once I decided not to have it, it just, as I've grown and gone through my journey, it became easier to not have it because I just made step upon step upon step. And then Siobhan Harris would say, nope, I just don't do that anymore. I just don't do that. You know, it's just kind of this, for me, it's very black and white. It's, I don't even entertain the possibility of that. I'm like, that looks delicious. It smells great. I would like to have some, but I don't dare yet. Not yet. Not now. And so, yeah, I'm not sure if I have any other tips.
That's great. One of the tricks that I do is I will hold a cup of water or some kind of soda. And I mean, like fizzy water, not sweetened soda, but like plain fizzy water. And then when somebody asks me, oh, can I get you something? I'm like, oh, no, I'm all good. And I just show them my bottle or my can or whatever it is that I'm holding. I'm good. You know, I think the hostess just wants to make sure that you have what you need a lot of the time, or whoever's in charge of the event. And I can appreciate that, because when I host events at my house, I just want to make sure that everybody's comfortable and has what they need. So I just kind of have learned that if you're holding something, they tend to not ask you too many questions, because they see that you're taking care of whatever it is that you need. That's awesome.
That's a good strategy.
So we're winding up here, and I wanted to know if there is still something that you're actually working on in recovery. Is there still something that you are either struggling with or still working on that, you know, that you're trying to make your own in your recovery?
Yes, I'm still working on the timing of my meals, trying to have 3 meals a day instead of grazing or snacking throughout the day. Working on that for the program I'm doing. I want to finish the program that I started with, but I'm totally accepting that I've made my own tweaks and my own changes, what works for me. But on my very slow pace, I'm continuing through that program. I might go back to food journaling at some point. And if not, that's okay. I'll do the other steps, which include the 3 meals a day instead of snacks. If you're snacking, it's more if you're pregnant or if you're an athlete and you need a little bit more because you can't get it just from the meals. So timing of meals. And then I don't have my meals, like 3 meals, all prepped and ready the night before. And that's not necessarily good or bad. That in my mind, that's the ideal. Like, wouldn't it be nice if I had breakfast is in this bowl and lunch is right here ready, and then dinner is this, you know? And I sometimes have done that, or sometimes I'll have one of those ready to go. But other times I'll just kind of have things available or ready in the fridge, or I'll just have a plan or something in the freezer. I'll cook soup and put it in freezer bags and I'll have it as options. Something that helped was learning that I could just have a couple of staples, certain meals that I would eat if I am okay with it, kind of over and over. Most days I have a burrito bowl and I have a breakfast bowl, which is a breakfast burrito with no tortilla, but just some other thing like rice. And then I'll have something like chili with a brown, or I'll have what I call quote unquote pasta salad. So I'll have brown rice with ham and marinara sauce and sometimes tomatoes. And sometimes I'll throw in like pecans or goat cheese or olives. So it's like a pasta bowl, but it's no flour. It's kind of just like made with rice. So that's kind of yummy. It doesn't have tons of protein, but I'll have though. It's helped now that I have those things that I typically eat. I don't have to start from square one every day. Like, what am I going to eat? You know? So I have this, it's becoming more routine to say, oh, I'm out of cooked eggs, I better cook some for today and tomorrow. Or I don't have things in the freezer, it's starting to dwindle, my freezer stash of my meals, so it's time to cook something when I can. And so I don't know if that's really something that I need to actually improve, or if this kind of works, you know?
I kind of do the same thing that you do. I kind of eat the same thing over and over again until I'm kind of sick of it, and then I'll move on to something else. But currently, I think I've been eating the same derivation of breakfast, I think, for about a month now, and I still like it. So I just keep eating. It's very easy. All I have to do is make sure I have the ingredients on hand, and it goes very well. And it makes my energy up for 4 hours, which is the real goal for me for breakfast. When you have a busy life, I don't want to be hungry in the 2 hours later and then not be able to get to something, because then that's just kind of miserable. And then I'm focused on my stomach growling as opposed to all the things that I need to be doing. So
same. Yeah. I love not that. I thought that I just had to eat all the time, but it's because of what I was eating. Mm-hmm. I love that feeling of not like, oh, I have to go have a snack. You know, it's not going to hold me long enough. It's so nice to not be hungry all day. I just have these meals and then I can do what I need to do for a while. It's wonderful.
Yep. That's the same thing with lunch too. I'm like, I just need it to get me through 4 hours so I can get to dinner. And then I can just keep going on with my day. I just want to keep my energy up. And that's a big change. You know, it's funny. I don't think I would have ever said that about myself because I was always, what's the next meal? What's the next meal?
What are you going
to do? Oh, I'm going to visit this person. What are they going to cook? Blah, 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 blah.
I know. Well, and I do find myself snacking if I don't really have anything ready. Then if I have a busy day or whatever, then I'm just kind of finding things randomly that I can eat from the pantry or the fridge and kind of playing catch up all day, but I'm not eating the foods that are a problem for me. So I still count that as, well, that's fine. I'll just keep trying tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a win. That's definitely a win. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and ask our signature question. And so if your body or spirit could speak, what would it say about the changes you have made on your journey?
I will read you what I wrote because I thought about it the other day and now, on the spot. Here are my papers, everybody. Here's my papers. Okay, here we go. I think my body would thank me for making the changes I did, which are creating positive changes in my health and will hopefully allow me to live longer and more healthily. She would have noticed that this journey has also increased my motivation to improve in other ways too, like exercising and getting enough sleep. My body would probably thank me for listening to it and trying to learn which foods work with it and which foods don't. And for my spirit, I think my spirit would say that it feels a new kind of freedom now. Where there used to be a clash, a conflict, and a guilt, there is now a feeling of peace and calm. With help from many people and God, I've finally found a solution to my struggle, and it feels like I've conquered the main part of my addiction. I think my spirit would have compassion on my past self and have gratitude for the journey as well as where I now stand. That's what I wrote.
That's awesome. Thank you, Charity. Thank you for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining me this week for Food Junkies Recovery Stories. Make sure you join our Facebook group, Sugar Free for Life Support Group. I'm Sweet Enough. Please subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in today's story, we would appreciate a ratings on iTunes. If you've been inspired by today's show and would like to be a guest, please reach out through the email provided in the show notes. If you have additional questions, CJ is a food addictions professional and works one-on-one with clients. You can find her email address and website in the show notes. Thank you for joining us.